This meeting is now being recorded.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening. This is Greg Shatton, and this is a call of the jurisdiction subgroup of CCWG Accountability Workstream 2, meeting number 33, May 30th, 2017, 1900 UTC. Begin with the welcome, which just occurred, and then to the review of agenda. That is happening now. The first item will be the usual administration, followed by a review of decisions and action items from the last call, which both relate to item 5.1. So we'll have a discussion of that item at that point. Then we have several questionnaire responses to review, so that will take place during the bulk of the call, middle of the call, and then a review of ICANN's litigation items that have been recently submitted to the list. Following that, any AOB. If anybody has any AOB now, please let me know. Otherwise, we will move on to the administration portion of the call. Seeing nothing, we will move on to administration. I'll ask if there are any changes to statements of interest.
Greg, this is Kavus. I have a question if you can kindly reply. If not, I will let you later.
Excuse me?
This is Kavus Arastri. I have a question, please. Yeah.
Yes, let's just get through the administration here, and then I'll take the question. There don't seem to be any changes to...
No. You talk about AOB. I have one question of AOB to raise it. Just put it in the file, and then when I reach there, I will raise it. Yes, I have one question. Yeah.
Okay. We've moved beyond that, but we don't need to be sticklers. So please, I'll go ahead. Go ahead, Kavus.
Yes. My question is that we are about end of the May and the closing is June. My question is that do we, this group, I mean, have any meeting during the CCWG or during the ICANN in Johannesburg? Just a question. I am not suggesting anything. I just want to know whether we have anything there, whether we meet there or whether we have some plan for to meet there in that before or after the ICANN, before the CCWG, during the CCWG, or after. Just a question that may be considered for further reply. Not now, maybe next week.
Thank you, Kavus. That's a good question. We don't have anything planned yet, but I think it would be a good idea to try to do that. I don't know exactly what the schedule will be for the CCWG meeting day on day zero, whether there'll be any breakout time at that time or any other time that might suggest itself as a time for us to meet. If not, then I would like to look for some time during the schedule where we could find some time to meet, and we can perhaps do a doodle poll, take that offline. So we'll get back to, I'll also have to discuss that with staff and, you know, generally speaking, see how we can plan that or whether we can plan that. David McCauley, I see you have your hand up.
Greg, thanks. David McCauley here for the record. I just wanted to note for attendees that I have two policy interns sitting with me now, Jonathan Peister and Garrett Hink, who are going to be with VeriSign as interns this summer. Thank you.
Great. Well, welcome, David, and welcome Jonathan and Garrett. The more policy people in the world, the better, I guess. It keeps people from saying bad things about lawyers, at least. We can move on to administration. There were no changes to SOIs. Do we have any audio-only participants? Anyone not in the Adobe Connect? It appears the answer is no. Phil Corwin had noted he was 3,200, but it appears he's turned into Phil Corwin, I believe. Or is he not in here at all? Well, we have Phil Corwin in some form. Oh, there he is. Yes. So that brings us to four. Who's joined, please? We do now have a...
Sorry, it was the Chancellor Pina joining. I'm sorry.
Are you... I have your name there. We now have a telephone number ending in 3791. Who is 3791? Well, now it disappeared. Okay. Must be something in the wiring here. Okay. Let's move on to item four. On the last call, we had a discussion about whether to invite questionnaire respondents to respond in some fashion to the group's evaluation, analysis, the discussion of their response. There was a kind of a loose result, the idea of inviting them to attend one call, either the call on which the group initially discussed the response or on the following call or a following call, with the idea that the group might prefer to discuss the response amongst itself rather than engage in an immediate colloquy with the submitter. There were since some discussions on the list, therefore I felt it was and not that many people participated. So I want to confirm what the direction of the group is. A couple of different options that have been discussed. The first two I've already mentioned, which are to have them on the same call or on the following call where their questionnaire is discussed. Another option is to have an email response from them after sending them the evaluation, of course recognizing that the evaluations that we have are, at least some extent, evaluations and analysis by one person, and not necessarily endorsed by the subgroup, and we haven't engaged in any kind of drafting exercise to take any of these evaluations and turn them into group documents. The last possibility would be for us to submit questions to the person submitting the response. So I hope I haven't confused the options too much. Two are to have them on the call. One is to have them respond via email to the evaluation, and the last is to have them respond via to questions that we have. I guess the final option is none at all. They can respond by a public comment along with everybody else. So I see hands. And as a general question, if there's support to invite people to the meetings at all, that will help. And if there isn't, that will also help make the decision, at least in general. Caboose, please go ahead.
Yes, Greg. Between 15th and 25th of May, there was a meeting of the ITU Council in which One of the topics was international internet-related public policy issues. And on that occasion, I discussed with some of the people attending that meeting, and two people, they were interested to attend a call or recall in which their responses were presented or analyzed. And they most welcomed that, and they said that they would be happy to do that. They were more in favor of attending the call, although some of them, or one of them, are a member of the group that could easily attend the meeting without any hesitation. The other one says that, yes, if there is this opportunity, it is welcome that they attend and listen to the analysis that has been made in regard with the analysis was done by one of our team members, and if there is a need to either provide a further clarification or any comment with respect to analysis, they will do that. So I suggest that, if possible, our colleagues, that means you, consider to providing that opportunity to those people. Thank you.
Thank you, Sabuth. That is indeed one of the options we're considering. But, of course, it's the group's decision which option to pick. Tatiana Tropina, please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Tatiana Tropina is speaking for the record. I think that as one of the evaluators, I think that this would really depend on whether we are taking the accounts into concern or we kind of rejecting. I mean, in all of the cases, they have to be invited. But I believe that, for example, my case, I'm analyzing two responses. I do think that in both responses, serious concerns are brought, you know, up. And I think that in any case, there is a need to send an email to, for example, Russian Ministry of Telecommunications. For the second response, we have Milton Müller and Farzan Abadi on the call that, yes, the jurisdiction subgroup thinks that your concerns are to be discussed in the future, like considerations of this subgroup, and we are inviting you to participate in the call. When your concerns would be discussed in a particular call, we will inform you particularly if you don't want to join the group. So I believe that instead of, you know, sending them the response, because I also believe that the response should be, you know, kind of confirmed by the group anyway. My evaluation should be confirmed by the group. Are we really considering these concerns or not? And then if we are, yes, let's send the email. Like, we are going to discuss this, join us. Yes. And, of course, if we need clarification. So, but I believe that it will all depend on the result of evaluation itself. Thank you.
Thanks, Tatiana. So it seems like we should conclude our evaluation and then decide how to handle interfacing with the evaluator or with the respondent. That would seem to be the summary of your view. David McCauley.
Thanks, Rick. It's David McCauley here. I just wanted to I appreciate what Caboose and Tatiana said. I don't agree. I basically just wanted to reiterate that what I said in the email list last Thursday, that it seems to me that the questionnaire was an opportunity to speak. And I think that we should only give someone a chance to come in and make a statement in the group if we seriously mangle what they had put in their comments. And I think we in this subgroup are intending to read these responses ourselves, and so maybe we could police that, but I think someone should have a chance to speak within the group if we seriously get wrong what they submitted, but otherwise not. And I certainly am not a fan of email in any case because they just go on and on without end. So largely a reiteration of what I put on the list last Thursday. Thank you.
Thank you, David. So I think that is another option, which is, I guess I would ask you, David, how would we know if we seriously mangle what they had put in their comments?
Thanks, Greg. I'm assuming that we will be reading these ourselves. For instance, I did a review of the comment by Rita Forsey, who was a GAC representative from Italy. And while I intended, while I tried to capture it or capture the spirit of the comment, I think that there are others within this group that can catch me out if I failed in that respect. Also, I think it's important, I have no problem with sending a reminder to folks that submitted answers that they can follow the discussions of our group on the archives or the public postings, so they might do it themselves. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Caboose.
Yes, I want to compliment what David mentioned. We invite those people to attend the call, but keep silence until we make the analysis being presented. And then we ask them, do you think that what you analyze and presented to the group reflect what you sent to us? On that sense, they could say, yes, we have no additional comments, or they may say that we have not been properly understood, and this is a clarification. So it is not a dialogue between the group and them. It is just to provide them to listen actively to the analysis, and should they have any problem or comment, not problem in fact, they could come in. In that sense, we don't want to engage in the discussion or dialogue with us. We just say that this is, let's take the issue. Tatiana provided the response from the mass media communication of the Russian Federation. That's that. She presented that, and the Russian people, they are there. They listen to that. Then you, as a chair, ask that, do you believe that all your comment has been properly reflected here or not? If they say yes, no problem, no discussion. If they say no, we provide them opportunity to further explain and remove any doubt and inconsistency. This is necessary to maintain the openness of the ICANN. We are not judged. We are not doing anything in the absence of the people. We should be open, and we should provide the people to communicate with us, and we should share our understanding with them. So in some sense, I don't agree with David, which is very restrictive thing that no, just send them email, don't allow them. We are the master of everything. We are authorized to do whatever we believe is correct, and we don't allow anyone. That tends to stick. If they believe that we have not properly analyze or properly understood their comments. To that sense, limited intervention. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. I would note a logistical issue, at least, which is that we've already discussed two responses, and we're set to discuss three more, or a continued discussion of the JustNet Coalition, and then two more, plus the group of very short responses. And this was our original plan. I'm going to suggest an option. I'd like to see who might agree with this, which is a variation on what I've heard, which is to have this group discuss the evaluation and then to provide the recording and the caption, transcript or caption, to the respondent and see if they would like to respond by attending the following call or a following call. That way we can deal with the questionnaires as we already have, and it may give the opportunity, especially for those who may not follow the discussion, maybe for language reasons or other reasons, since we did have submissions in foreign languages, foreign to me at least, that would give them the chance to read and respond without having to follow all of our back and forth. So that would be my suggestion, and I think that kind of combines a couple of different thoughts here. Then we would allocate time as we got responses from the respondents as to whether they wanted to come, and we might either put on an additional 30 minutes of call or something like that to accommodate that so that we can continue to move forward. So why don't I take some green ticks if you agree with this approach. That is the approach of sending the respondents the transcript and recording where they're of the portion of the meeting where their meeting was discussed, where their response was discussed, and then having them attend a following meeting should they choose. I see several green ticks. I'll take red X's for those who disagree or object. I see three objections. I would say the ticks have it. Let me count ticks. Keep them up, please. 1, 2, 3, 4. Well, we have 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 ticks. And now we have 1 red X. So I'm not sure if people were taking them down because they changed their mind. It was either 6-3 or 4-2.
Right.
Yes.
I was counting them, and it was 6-3.
Okay.
On my last count.
I think that. Okay, that seems to be the maximum number here. So why don't you, let's follow that plan, let's follow that plan and, take down your knots and crosses. That would be your checks and crosses. And now we can move into, the actual, questionnaire, response. Why don't we begin by continuing our discussion of the I don't think we really need to take a look at the sign-up sheet. Let's move past that. Let's start by going back to the JustNet Coalition response. I took the liberty of preparing a summary of that response since the initial submission was more analysis and observations, maybe we can put my summary up in the Adobe. Tatiana, if you could clear your red X, unless you're just feeling cross. Okay, well, this is not the one I wanted up, but why don't we go to the JustNet summary that I prepared. There we are. Okay, so as we noted on the last call, they have responded, JustNet Coalition responded only to questions 4A and B. And I wanted to offer more opportunity for discussion of their comment and also some chance to have a walkthrough or evaluation summary of their comment. Which was not really the subject of last week's review. Basically, as I read 4A, it appeared that the gist of JNC's response was that it's a problem that ICANN has to comply with U.S. law, and specifically that application of U.S. jurisdiction results in a prioritization of in U.S. law and public interest. And similarly, the application of any country's jurisdiction over ICANN results in a prioritization of that country's law and public interest, and that this interferes with ICANN's ability to pursue its mission. JNC believes that the U.S. has a high enforcement capacity, that's their words, to ensure that U.S. laws and powers, executive, legislative, and judicial powers, which apply to people and organizations in the U.S. are normally respected, and that all subject actors act in accordance with those laws and powers. They believe that there's an illusion promoted by many in the ICANN community that ICANN has a main reliance on contractual law. And they claim also that the public law of the country of incorporation and location supersedes any contractual law. And based on a reading of a doctrine of public policy, which states that a court will not enforce either the laws of another state or a contract where that contract tends to promote breach of the law, of the policy behind the law, or tends to harm the country or its citizens. Moving from there, they believe that this indicates that this shows the supremacy of the U.S. policies and laws over ICANN's actions, including its policy processes. They go on to identify cases where the U.S. courts have already exercised jurisdiction by taking cognizance of a suit, which is a concept, maybe that's a concept that is better understood in other countries. In the U.S. courts, the U.S. courts basically have to take any suit that's properly pleaded and brought before it. Only the Supreme Court gets to choose its cases, the U.S. Supreme Court, that is. And generally speaking, if the parties don't object to jurisdiction, the courts will rarely spontaneously have their own jurisdictional thought. They conclude that that in these cases, ICANN never contested the application of California law, of which, of course, it couldn't. There would be no basis for that. And that this provides clear proof that the entire range of public law of the U.S. and jurisdiction of every relevant U.S. court fully apply to ICANN's action. And that U.S. law and courts limit ICANN's action. Lastly, in this section, they object to this and state that ICANN's mission is supposed to be determined by global community processes and not by U.S. law and its interpretation by U.S. courts. We'll see if there are any, let me just get through, one more part of the summary here. They say that there is a contradiction hidden in plain sight, that ICANN's actions were found by U.S. courts not to violate U.S. law because ICANN has its lawyers and makes sure that it does comply with U.S. law. I believe this is also required by the bylaws. JNC objects to what they call the pre-configuring of ICANN's actions to U.S. law, which they believe is as much of a problem as any subsequent action of the U.S. court forcing ICANN's hand, their language. So that is the general setup of their argument on 4A, and then they go into some specific cases. So this is a good time to take a break from summarizing their submission and having some discussion of it by the group. And I see Cavus has his hand up. Cavus, please go ahead. Cavus, please go ahead. Don't hear you yet. Cavus may be having some audio problems. Would anybody else like to comment?
Yeah.
Milton?
I said, please kindly.
I hear Dr. Bruce.
Yeah. Is it okay now?
Yes,
can
I hear
I
you
continue?
Now. Please go ahead. Yes.
Okay.
Please go.
I said that please kindly don't consider that it is something in opposition of you. This is just a fact. I think your intervention is overrepresented. At any comment, you present or comment for several minutes. Some of your comments are very useful, but I think you should limit yourself to summarize the situation, but not at every point you comment and you try to convince the people that whatever is saying by one or two is right. Please kindly, if possible, limit your intervention to the time that you want to summarize the discussion and guide the group into direction, but not at every point being a speaking on every item and expressing your view. Otherwise, you should put yourself into the queue, like David McCauley did made in his group, and speak on your turn when you're in the queue, but not speaking at every point. I'm sorry, is not criticizing you. That is just to say that it is more healthy and helpful that you kindly limit your intervention to summarizing the situation. Or if you have your personal comments, please be in the queue, put your name in the queue, and come as a participant, but not as a chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Caruso. I was just trying to clarify some of the factual points, but I am to take your point, and I'll just I'll make my comments, whatever they may be, separately from the summary section, summarizing their comment. Christopher.
Thank you, Greg. Christopher Wilkinson, good evening. My fundamental point, I believe that you're all familiar with already, is that I actually believe this is a political issue, a political problem, rather than a legal problem. And with all respect to the other excellent work that our group is doing, I do not expect this subgroup to resolve the political problem. Regarding Greg's paper, I see, well, of course, Greg will clearly agree with me that I could personally, as a non-lawyer, I could not possibly have written such an erudite paper. But turning over the pages, what I was really interested in was the analytical comments on page 4, and particularly on Greg's analysis of the question of obtaining immunity under U.S. International Organizational Immunity Act. Now, you'll know from my previous paper that I don't actually agree with that as being a useful option, but that's just a personal opinion, and it would have been very helpful, Greg, if you had filled in the column on the left, on the right-hand side with respect to that option proposed by the JustNet Coalition. As I've indicated in the chat, I would be quite happy to participate in a discussion in this group with JustNet Coalition and, of course, other respondents. Thank you.
Thank you, Christopher. I ran out of steam. I must admit it was about 3 in the morning when I got to that point in the paper, and my analytical juices had stopped flowing. I will take off my rapporteur hat, which I try to do rarely, but in this case, at least both to supply facts and a little bit of analysis, which is that immunity runs counter to many of the accountability mechanisms that either already were in place or were put in place, which depend on the ability of ICANN not to be immune to suit by private parties in court, including as a way of enforcing the IRP, but it's also a way generally for parties that interact with ICANN to seek to hold it accountable. So that immunity, to me, seems to be the opposite of accountability. Immunity essentially means being above the law. Secondly, the nuts and bolts of immunity, as suggested here, are far more complex. To actually get immunity under the Act, one has to begin with an application to the Department of State, which is reviewed by the undersecretary, an undersecretary and a secretary of state, Rex Tillerson, in this administration. They would have to recommend immunity to the President of the United States, who would then decide whether or not to grant ICANN this immunity and under what circumstances. And then that would have to be approved by an act of Congress. This may have been easier for the International Fertilizer Development Corporation than I think it would be for ICANN in any administration. I would also note that the IFDC is a peculiar type of organization, and it's only one of a class of quasi-public agricultural assistance corporations. There are about 20 of them, I believe, that have a similar status. Not all of them started as a private entity. But basically, IFDC did, although it started out being proposed by Congress because the U.S. Tennessee Valley Authority was answering too many questions from foreign farmers and was being swamped, needed a to form a different organization. And I note that while they are still technically a nonprofit, they consider themselves an international organization and hold themselves out as such and have a much different type of organization than we do. There are rather difficult. I think the idea of immunity is difficult to align with accountability, which is of course the main thrust of this entire working group. And the mechanics are difficult to align with anything that could be accomplished by this group or possibly by anybody, even if one were really to want to do it. So that's, Christopher, my 10 cents on immunity. So I'll put it back my rapporteur hat on to the extent that it was off during that. Christopher, is that a new hand?
Yeah, that's a new hand very quickly. Thank you very much, Greg. I see that we fundamentally agree on this particular point. You will note that in my much more succinct comment, I drew the link between immunity and the enhanced, the powers of the enhanced community and suggested that it would work. You've also provided, which I did not know before, the procedure for acquiring immunity in the United States law, and I think that is a definitive consideration. You may just need to explain in due course to JustNet coalition why this is a very bad idea.
Thank you, Christopher. I note in the chat. Aubrey Doria notes immunity is not necessarily blanket immunity, and that is true. As a matter of fact, the Immunity Act may not even offer the type of immunity that JustNet would like, which is really immunity from state action by the United States. But in any case, that's beyond a kind of casual discussion. Tiago, please go ahead.
Thank you, Greg. This is Tiago. I just like to add a word on the immunity question. You mentioned that according to your own views, immunity would be contrary to enhancing accountability. But the thing is, accountability embodies encompasses different aspects and functions. I think Avery Doria is right in pointing to the fact that immunity needs not be blanket. So So it might apply to certain activities performed by Atkin, but not to others. And another comment that I'd like to make is the following. Take, for example, the existence of the of this mechanism within ICANN to solve domain name disputes, the Uniform Domain Name Dispute Resolution Policy. This mechanism appears to be opposed in a way to the ACPA, which is the Anti-Cyber Squatting Consumer Protection Act. What I mean by that is if ICANN, if there is a dispute in relation to a domain name, this dispute might be solved by subjection to U.S. jurisdiction under the ACPA Act, or it could be solved through ICANN mechanisms. If immunity existed, for example, of course, it wouldn't be immunity for ICANN in this case. But this is just an example of a situation where immunity could, for example, prevent the United States, in this particular instance, from exercising jurisdiction over certain disputes that can find a solution through ICANN mechanisms. Thank you.
Thanks, Tiago. Of course, that the immunity being discussed will not have any effect on ACPA cases since they don't have anything to do with ICANN's jurisdiction. But in any case, let's close the queue on this, noting that Tatiana will not be on next week's call. I'd like to ask her to present her evaluations now. So please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Greg, and I'm really sorry for pressing for my presentation because I will land somewhere in the middle of the call, like, I don't know, 20 minutes, you know, till it ends, so I still might join. Nevertheless, so I have two responses to evaluate, and I will try to be brief because anyone who needs the details can either read my email or with a summary or just check the responses because I think both of them are very interesting and both of them are very relevant. So I will start with the one, but I think that in some points the two responses are overlapping. So I will start with the response from the Ministry of Telecom and Mass Communications of the Russian Federation. Again, I want to say that the fact that I'm evaluating this response has nothing to do that I'm Russian national, and I'm presenting my own the individual views and only in my individual capacity. So the Russian ministry replied to the question one and brought the case how business privacy and ability to use the purchase domain name related services was affected by ICANN jurisdiction by bringing the case of sanctioned countries of the Office of Foreign Assets Control, OFAC, of the U.S. Department of the Treasury. And the respondent, the Russian minister, refers to the case of the Crimea sanctions when, in accordance with the executive order, U.S. companies were prohibited from supplying services and goods in the Republic of Crimea, which led to some consequences, and Russian Federation Ministry lists these consequences. But in particular, I think one of the cases is especially relevant was the announcement from several U.S. registrar companies, for example, GoDaddy, that domain names of the registrants from the Republic of Crimea will be removed from the registries .com, .net, .org, .info, and others. And the announcement referred to the trade restrictions, which did not allow registrars to carry out business with any individual or companies located in the Republic of Crimea after these sanctions. And Russian Federation in this regard not only brought the case, but they also expressed a very strong belief that the jurisdiction subgroup that shall analyze not only the incidents connected to OFAC, but also gather information how this risk can influence ICANN jurisdiction issues in the future. There was no information provided on question two or question three. With regard to question 4A, the Ministry of Telecom of Russian Federation didn't provide any material but expressed opinions that since top-level domain registrars enter into agreements with registrars individually, there will be always conflict between ICANN's policies and different national law systems. And as one of the examples, they brought the EU General Data Protection Regulation, which they think ICANN was not prepared to, and there are still many discussions. And also the ministry brings several issues related to the domain name system and infrastructure with regard to why shall be under the jurisdiction of the single state. Replying to question 4B with regard to alternative jurisdiction solutions, the Russian ministry suggests several solutions. I believe that we briefly discussed most of them already in this group or expressed our opinions already. So the first one is, of course, the governance of the domain name system by the international law and treaties, then separation of ICANN's responsibilities over different jurisdictions, and then, of course, jurisdictional immunity, which has been widely discussed. So my analysis, I will try to be brief again. I recommend, of course, that every participant of this group reads the response on their own, or at least the summary of it, and make their own conclusions. However, I strongly recommend that the issue of trade sanctions and countries under sanctions and OFAC has to be discussed in details and assessed by our group, because this is a serious issue. It is a jurisdictional issue. It definitely influenced the ability of individuals and companies to carry out any business related to domain names. And this issue comes up with more than one response, especially in the next response, which I'm evaluating. It will be analyzed in details. So my evaluation, the issue of OFAC should be analyzed. As to alternative jurisdiction solution, I believe that we can take into consideration and discuss and reject or whatever any solutions proposed by Russian Federation, because apparently this discussion is already ongoing, and it will be ongoing anyway if the issue of alternative jurisdiction will ever come up seriously in this group of ICANN relocation of anyhow changing the jurisdiction, the status quo. But I also added in my response that, if I'm not mistaken, I mean, immunity is referring to our previous discussion, cannot be given in the way probably Russian Federation wants it by the U.S. government. So this is I end my evaluation here, and I can either move to... Oh, sorry, I just noticed on the chat that I have to speak slower. I'm sorry. I would like to ask for your permission, unless there are some urgent comments, that I can move. I see that Kavu's hand is up. I can move to the next response, because these responses are overlapping, but I will leave it to Greg and others to decide how to proceed. Thanks.
Why don't we take a... If the intervention is brief, Kavus can go ahead now. If it's going to be more lengthy or might involve the second response, then we could do it later after both responses are summarized. How would you like to proceed, Kavus?
Thanks, Tatiana. Thank you very much for the work you have done. Two comments to what you said. The first one, in fact, is not a comment, is some support of the issue of OFAC has been raised in three responses. One is from Iran, the other is from, if I am not mistaken, from Farzaneh, and the third one from Russia. So it merits to be discussed. I then have a question to you that analyzes, what do you interpret that the names or TLD will be removed from .NET, .org, .x, .y if it relates to Crimea? Under what rules ICANN or any other people take that action? Is it a political decision? I don't think that ICANN should go to the political decision. I don't know the issue, not I don't know. I don't want to discuss the issue of Crimea. Who is wrong, right, who is wrong. But I don't think that the TLD or removal of TLD would be subjected to any political motivation. This is very dangerous. It has been done before for some other countries and may continue. So this is a very important issue for jurisdiction needs to be discussed. Greg asked me to be brief, I will be brief. So the next question that Tatiana mentioned, that he rejects a solution proposed by Russian Federation. I don't think that neither Tatiana nor anyone of us should reject a solution. We should consider the solution to see whether we are in a position to agree or implement that. But I don't think that we have any right to reject any solution. We don't have any entitlement. We don't have any right. We don't have any authority to say we reject. Who we are, really, who we are that we reject. We reject the proposal of a country which is submitted by a representative of the government and so on and so forth. We should consider maybe, we say relevant, irrelevant, accept, not accept, but not saying rejection that is too strong. And I think that this rejection should not come from Tatiana. Tatiana should say that this is the solution, and you put the solution to the meeting and ask the meeting what the meeting think about that solution. Could agree with that solution, could say the solution is outside our mandate, could say the solution is impractical, unimplementable, but I don't think that either myself or Tatiana or any one of these people has the right to say we reject. We should just put it to the discussions of the people. Thank you. Sorry, Tatiana, you are a very kind person. I hope that you did not interpret my intervention differently. It's just something on the
plate. Thank you. We only have 5 minutes left, so if you turn to Tatiana's other evaluation, that would be helpful. Please go ahead, Tatiana.
Hello, Tatiana Jubina is speaking again. Thank you very much, and I replied Kavus on the chat. So I'm moving to the response from the IGP, Internet Governance Project, and I will move straight to the answers. So with regard to question one, IGP raises three issues. First of all, it's also sanctioned countries and OFAC issues. And IGP raises the issues of the possibility of the OFAC license for providing services to specially designated nationals not being granted to this license not being granted or granted in a non-transparent manner or delayed or non-transparent manner in the ICANN processes of applying for such license, and the absence of ICANN commitment to transparency and responsible with regard to these issues of the sanctions countries. Then IGP brings the very important issues which goes further than just, you know, U.S., and OFAC sanctions, because some registrars follow OFAC sanctions and regulation in the legal agreement with registrants, even if they're not based in the U.S. And IGP makes an example of, for example, of registrar based in Curacao or registrar based in Turkey. So there are valid examples that have to be considered with connection to the risk of OFAC. And I will say further in my evaluation that this group should consider this issue and analysis on this. And the third issue they bring in this regard is the problem of high costs of money transfers between ICANN and countries which are under the sanctions. So this is all for the question one. With regard to question two, IGP refers to the court case brought by a group of terrorist victims in the U.S. courts against the state of Iran. And IGP shows how the domains ir.ir.sy and .kp could be affected by the ICANN current jurisdiction. I will leave it to everyone because I don't have time to include these details of litigations in my analysis, or maybe IGP can bring them up in the next call if there is any need. So I believe that this should be also taken into consideration. With regard to the question three, IGP provide the reference to a very interesting blog post which gives more information and more analysis on ICANN jurisdiction and sanctions countries. And
IGP also suggests some solutions with regard to OFAC, and I believe that if this group is to discuss OFAC, these solutions might be considered, like, for example, a general OFAC waiver or contractually obliging registrants to investigate the possibility of receiving an OFAC license for providing services for sanctioned countries, or prohibiting registrars from arbitrary canceling domain name without notice, and so on. So, and briefly, for 1 minute, my analysis, I strongly believe that the response from IGP and as well as blog post with the solutions has to be explored and give special attention by this group, especially OFAC, but also the case of IRC, Y, and KP, and the possibly suggested solutions. So I'm not in the position to recommend any conclusions to these particular issues, but I believe that they are to be discussed in the group because they were brought up at least in two responses. Thank you. That's all from me.
Thank you, Tatiana. Sorry I've come so close to the end of the call. Still have a couple of minutes. I see Tiago has his hand up.
Thank you, Greg. I understand that Tatiana won't be able to make it for our next call. And then you wrote in the chat that for that reason, perhaps we shouldn't discuss those questionnaires next time. I think that an alternative would be to make different action items for next meeting, in which we would be discussing specific issues raised by those questionnaires. So we wouldn't be discussing the questionnaires themselves, but we would be discussing issues raised by those questionnaires. So the absence of Tatiana in that meeting, I think, wouldn't prevent us from going through those issues. And those two specific issues that I have in mind are those suggested by Tatiana herself, namely, number one, the question related to OFAC sanctions and the case of country code top-level domains being the subject of writ of attachments before U.S. courts. Thank you.
Thank you. Caboose, please go ahead.
Do you hear me, please? Hello?
Yes, please go ahead, Caboose. We hear you.
Excuse me, Greg. I think that the issue of OFAC, as I mentioned in the chat, is warrant to be clearly and seriously discussed. I'm not suggesting one way or other, but that things is merits to be discussed. Impact of that in our jurisdictions, discussions, and any possible way to address the issue. This is very important. Second, I think that we should wait until Tatiana would come back to the call and discuss the two cases that she has analyzed. And thirdly, I suggest that we request the respondent to those questionnaires to kindly and advise or inform whether they want to participate in the call, either in a call practically or in a passive way in a chat. So this is the three things that I want to make at this last minute of call. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. I think we should figure out the mechanics of the next call, or really next two calls. It would be my suggestion to prepare for a call on the OFAC situation in 2 weeks' time, so that we have both ample time for people to prepare, also that we'll have some people back who won't be attending next week's call. I think there is definitely background information. I, for one, would like to perhaps hear from GoDaddy, their view on what happened with Crimea domains, so that we can get more general information on that. So I think that we could have a more fruitful and well-rounded conversation in 2 weeks' time. And then next week we can go over the litigation cases we didn't get to this week and the very short responses as well. And also, next week, we can pick up the discussion of the mandate, which we discussed briefly on last week's call, and there's been some chat on that on the list over the course of this week, but not a great deal. So what I'd like to do is to have a specific invitation not long after this call to discuss mandate next week, and then to discuss OFAC in 2 weeks' time. Unless there's anybody opposed to that, that's how we'll set that up. We are now 3 minutes past time. And thank you, Raphael. I understand you won't be on next week's call, so we won't discuss your cases next week. But we will certainly have cases to discuss. With that, brings us to any other business, but I think we've covered the other business at the beginning, actually. Note that our next meeting is the 8th of June at 1300, followed by the 15th of June at 0500. Hopefully we will make a great deal of progress both at those calls and on the list. Remembering we have 167 hours each week when we're not on the list, on the call, and only 1 hour a week when we are, so let's use all of those hours. So this call is now adjourned, and I thank you for the call. Please stop the recording, and I look forward to talking to you later. Bye.
Bye, everyone.